Final hour for the week. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and your home smart speaker. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, Gord Miller, our buddy, will join us later in the hour. He was calling the Leaf game last night and has a long-standing history and relationship with Wayne Gretzky, Walter Gretzky. Walter passing away last night at the age of 82. Our good friend Chris Schultz as well, who's a Canadian football legend and TSN legend, passing away. We heard about that news late last night into early this morning. Right. So it's been a difficult 24 hours, and we will touch on both of their legacies and just relationships with both of them a little bit later in the hour. Israel Gutierrez will join us from ESPN here in just a few moments. The Raptors losing back-to-back games leading into the trade deadline. We'll see what Izzy can tell us about that and the trade deadline around the corner. We know about Lowry's name being out there. What about Norman Powell? Chris Boucher, what would his value be around the league? Although I'm not sure you're looking to move on from him. He's playing so well, right, and he's got a really team-friendly option for next season. But we'll get to that more coming up with Israel Gutierrez. And the Leafs are back in action tomorrow night in Vancouver, yeah, coming off a rare loss last night.
Didn't you didn't Kyle shoot down the Philadelphia rumors and all of that? Like, is it all just nonsense out there, or do you believe that there's any chance?
I think
chance?
There's something there, right? I think Kyle is smart enough to – he's not going to ask for anything. He's not going to campaign for anything publicly.
Right.
You know, he's dealing with a legacy that is intact up here and renowned in Toronto, right, even though he's playing in Tampa, right? Like, he'd be aware of the news that was made based on his house going up for sale.
Right.
And the ripple effect that had and the way people feel. And he's been here long enough. He gets it. You know, there's still some insecurities in the Raptors fan base. The championship didn't wipe those away.
Right.
Like, it's still a concern about a player leaving, a player wanting out. So I don't think he's going to do this publicly. I think he would shoot down anything publicly. And I'm not saying privately he's got a different tune, but there does appear to be a lot of smoke there in terms of teams lurking. You know, yep, what the payment would be, the fact that there aren't a lot of other high-end players that appear to be available right now, like impact players that you put Kyle Lowry on Philly, on the Clippers, like that really improves their team. He had 19 assists last night. Look,
right,
who he's playing with. Siakam's not there. OG Anunoby's not there. Fred VanVleet's not there. He just set a franchise record for assists. Like, he's still a stud. He's still a guy that can give you 35 premium minutes. Defends well, takes charges still, like, unlike anyone else in the league, can hit a big shot, has seen it all, done it all. So, you know, there's a lot there.
Right.
But he's too smart of a guy to publicly allow the narrative to run away. It's not going to happen. It's not worth it to him because I think he understands what he means here in Toronto, and he's going to have that the rest of his life.
Yeah. No, I kept thinking to myself, like, all this season I've thought, there's no way he's going anywhere. And then, I don't know, maybe the last couple of weeks I've kind of like maybe got my mind wrapped around, like, is it 50-50? Like, where are you at? Are you 50-50?
I think 50-50 is about right. 50-50 is about right. You can call us gutless all you want. It's not a hot take one way or the other. I think it's just assessing it properly.
Realistically.
Yes,
yeah.
I think you're being realistic. They're two games under 500. They're just holding on to a playoff spot. I think they can and will get in. And if they have Kyle, they definitely will. You take him out, you're risking missing at that point.
Right.
I mean, maybe you're dealing with a different scenario at that point. But I was with you. Coming into the season, I thought he's playing out the year. I thought they'd be a good team. I still think they've got the makings of a team when healthy with Nick Nurse coaching that is a playoff team. But it's bloated in the East, man. Like,
right,
Philly's getting there, and they're good. Brooklyn, Milwaukee, I think Boston will get there. But you look at Boston, the Knicks, Miami, Charlotte, Toronto, Chicago, Indiana, Atlanta, Washington's winning a bunch of ball games now. Like, they're all within like four games of each other. That's 10 teams.
I know.
And you're fighting it out for five spots. You know,
but a guy like
something's got to give.
Kyle could put you over the top, or you believe he could be, but if, you know, if Masai decides otherwise, then now you're really taking your chances.
Well, exactly. Like, I feel good about them getting in and them using their history, and I like their team. I don't love their team, but I like their team enough to suggest they'll get there over a Charlotte or even over the Knicks, who have a really tough schedule coming up, and have no experience of winning. But you take Lowry out, different story, for sure. Here is ESPN NBA reporter and analyst Israel Gutierrez. How you doing, Izzy?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
We're doing pretty well. How do you feel about that assessment of the East? You know, you look at it, once you get to Boston in the four hole, all the way down to maybe Washington, like there's a real bloated standing there. The Raptors are right in the middle of it. Do you see a lot of movement in the second half of the season in terms of the standings and jockeying for position?
I do see some. I mean, you think about a team like Miami, for example, probably going to straighten things out a little bit with, you know, after Jimmy Butler missed 10 straight games with the COVID thing and then missed a couple more here and there. So with some stability, they should be getting better. I'm not so certain about Boston, to be honest. I think they might be this level of up and down. They'll go through a streak or two, but I don't know if they'll ever sort of be a scary team there. But, you know, a lot of these teams, the Knicks, the Pacers, can you really trust them, you know, over the long term? You know, the Knicks, for example, are a team that, you know, depth-wise probably aren't the deepest. And if, you know, one or two injuries happen, will it be a major slide? I don't think too many people trust the Hawks to be able to come back after Lord Pierce's firing. So I think, you know, basically you're looking at the Raptors and their stability and their history and maybe the Hornets with their excitement and young talent. I would like to see those two teams probably solidify themselves the bottom four seeds. But, yeah, there should be some movement, some activity in the standings there, especially amongst the teams that, you know, really want to make a splash. You know, Toronto doesn't need that anymore. Obviously, they've won a championship. They're trying to make deep runs in the playoffs. But teams like the Knicks and whatnot definitely will be fighting all year long.
Well, you know, we started this conversation talking about Kyle Lowry and his standing here in Toronto, where Jamie and I figured coming into the season,
right,
he's playing out the year. He may be back beyond that and retire a Raptor. And you're well aware of his reputation up here. I mean, he's the number one Raptor in franchise history. He's beloved by everyone. But he's a free agent at the end of the year. He's not getting any younger. And there's a lot of smoke there. So, you know, if Kyle is on the table, there'd be a ton of teams lurking for him. But if you move beyond that, Norman Powell, you know, he played well last night. He's an inconsistent player. But when he's on, he's hitting shots. He can be a factor. And I think he can opt out at the end of the year. And then you get a guy like Chris Boucher, who's got a really team-friendly option where I think the team will clearly pick him up based on the way he's playing. He went off for 30 last night. He was 5-for-9 from three. Like, when you move beyond Lowry, of the realistic pieces that could be available coming to the trade deadline, do you think there would be teams calling the Raptors? And if so, what kind of market could we be talking about?
I mean, I definitely think there's a market for him there. In terms of the Raptors, you know, I'm kind of the opinion that if you want to, you know, do the franchise player a solid, you can, you know, I mean, obviously he's going to be a free agent or whatever, but you can move him and put him in a better situation when you know you're not a championship team. You know, I think you want to take advantage of as much as you can, sort of make it a win-win, right? You get a guy who everybody loves in Toronto into a winning place, and you can really solidify your rebuild and start that in motion, you know, maybe a little faster than you think if you move them. So I do think that there'd be, you know, there'd probably be some sentiment there, of course, but I think that would be okay if they were to move Kyle this season. And I do think there's plenty of market there. You know, I've read where a handful of teams would be interested in Kyle, including, I believe I read the Sixers, the Heat, among others. And just in terms of a guy that you know is going to be fearless now, you didn't know that before, but after winning a championship, I mean, the guy's, you know, completely fearless. You know he's going to defend well. You know he's going to take charges. You know he's probably going to get a couple of extra cheap calls on flops. And in a championship team, man, like that guy could be absolutely critical to a team, whether it
right.
be, you know, even just those two teams that I mentioned right there would be a huge difference maker for those two and could, you know, possibly, I would say if, you know, he goes to Philly, you're talking championship team on the Eastern side, caliber right there, even somebody that I would put probably ahead of Brooklyn in that scenario. So, yeah, I think there's plenty of people who will be interested in Kyle.
We just talked about Kyle Lowry, but what about the reputation of a guy like Masai Ujiri around the league? You know, again, I always have been focused on hoping that he stays with the Raptors for many years and extends his contract. You know, outside of Toronto, I guess the perception, you know, where is he ranked, or where do you see a guy like that as far as respect throughout the league? Because he certainly has a ton up here.
Well, I mean, I think around the league he's very well respected. I think it's also tricky, too, if you are a very wise and respected and knowledgeable GM, like maybe other people don't trust you because they think you're about to rob them in a trade scenario. But not to change the subject or anything, but like when I was thinking about this earlier today, looking at the Brooklyn Nets, and I'm like, well, when it's all said and done, are we all going to say, hey, Sean Marks, hell of a GM? Or are we going to say, wow, you know, these players created this situation in Brooklyn for him? Thanks to, you know, KD with the gravity in this case, and you've seen other people in the past, you know, whether it be LeBron to Miami or KD to the Warriors. You see the situation where it might not be the GM, just might be the beneficiary of certain situations when you're talking about like championship teams. So I don't think there's like a destination where you could say, hey, he's better off going somewhere else and building and taking his GM skills there. Because a lot of it is going to end up in, you know, whether you can win a championship or not depends on where the most powerful players in the league decide to play. And if your franchise is set, you know, if you've established a great franchise and a strong base, and then you get, you know, the Kawhi Leonard situation with Toronto, then you can win. And so I don't think that much different in, you know, 95% of the franchises out there. So, the only drawback being potentially that you wouldn't, you know, maybe a guy like a Kevin Durant or a star like that wouldn't want to create his super team in a team outside the States. You're always going to have that potential drawback. But again, there's evidence that you can win a championship there. So it could be the same, you know, there's no such evidence in Indiana or Sacramento just yet.
Right. Yeah. Well, exactly. And you talk about star power. We all know what's happened in Brooklyn with KD and Kyrie going there last year. Now James Harden is there. And now Blake Griffin has been bought out, and by all accounts, based on insiders, the reports are pushing towards him signing in Brooklyn. He's still got superstar name recognition, but he doesn't have a superstar game. What do you think he has left? If Griffin signs in Brooklyn, how big of a boost will that really be for the Nets?
Well, I would hope, and this is just wishful thinking here, that maybe Blake was kind of sandbagging it on a bad team and didn't really exert his full ability out there, because it would be pretty sad if he was this level of washed. But it's funny because there are two teams that I thought specifically need power forward help, and the Nets being one of them and Miami being the other one, and those are two teams that you heard were supposedly going after Blake, or maybe still are. And I think it would be a huge difference for the Nets. It's just because you got a knowledgeable big body, and you know, all due respect to Jeff Green, he fits in on that team really well. He's just not the guy that you're going to expect, hey, I can trust my 4 and 5 spot to him a lot and to DeAndre Jordan a lot. And so it's just, if you get you know, a slightly above average player at his position, then that's going to be an upgrade for them, especially with their depth. If you happen to get, you know, a Blake Griffin that's been holding back a little bit and is actually better, and he's looked in Detroit, then they just, you know, probably, you know, locked up a ticket to the finals if everybody stays healthy.
Right. Yeah, that kind of feels like where it might play out with Israel Gutierrez of ESPN.
Yeah.
Now that we're at the All-Star break, the MVP chatter, it's been hot for a while, but I think that focus is going to become even more clear. There's a lot of names, you know, which I like. I mean, in past years it was – even the last two, you thought it was Giannis or LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
This year it feels like you could be talking 4 or 5 different players with Jokic and Doncic and Joel Embiid. Steph's back in the chatter. Obviously LeBron's a part of that. Where do you stand on it, Izzy? If you were making a vote tonight, who would get your vote and why?
Well, if I were to vote tonight, I would vote and never vote early, because that's kind of what what gets me about, like, whenever I just, from covering the league for so long, it was almost like a sure thing that the first player or two that you mention in the MVP race is not even in like the top four by the time you're actually voting, right? This year, you're right, it does feel kind of different because it's been you know, sort of changing at the top a little bit, like one of those horse races where the leader just keeps changing. And, you know, I've got Nikola Jokic at the top and Joel Embiid right behind them, and them kind of currently separating from everybody else. But, you know, if LeBron has not only the advantage of being LeBron and all eyes are on him, but, you know, if he decides he wants to go on a 10-game run, it's going to be amplified because he's LeBron, so he could always jump to the top again. And I like the Steph name being thrown in there. Just I'm like James Harden being thrown in there if he's, you know, a triple-double machine for the rest of the year. But I tend to sort of look right now at the, because I did late in my writing career at like the player efficiency rating, and, you know, Jokic and Embiid are 1-2, and Jokic right as of a couple games ago was on record or on pace to be having the best player efficiency rating of all time. And so it is fun to watch, not only because there's so many candidates, but because it's high-level basketball.
Yeah, no kidding. Great stuff as always. Enjoy the All-Star break. Enjoy the games, and we'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
All right, guys. My pleasure.
There's Israel Gutierrez of ESPN. Yeah, Jokic is putting up numbers, but again, he's in Denver. Like, we didn't get to the whole draft last night where LeBron took Giannis, and I like that they still do it. The NHL created that, where you have captains and teams, and then everyone became a suck because someone had to go last. So they're like, it's too mean. We can't do this anymore.
Didn't Phil go last?
He did. He went last. And listen, it was awkward. It's tough. But someone's got to go last. We're all big boys. It's a business. You're an all-star. It doesn't mean you're the last player in the league to get picked. You're the last player of the best players in the game.
Right.
But last night, Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, both teammates in Utah, went last for each respective team. And LeBron tried to explain it that it was about Utah. It wasn't about them, which is not really what you want to hear if you're in real, you know, Salt Lake City, is you just grew up and no one cared about that team. But it's also, I think, somewhat true that Utah is just one of those teams. It's one of those states that just happens to exist and no one really knows what's going on down there.
I lived in Utah. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I played, we had a minor league team called the Salt Lake Golden Eagles. Dave Farish, do you remember that name?
Yes, with Randy Carlyle.
He was our head coach. It was a disaster. And we played out of the Delta Center, I think it was called, where the Jazz played.
The Jazz played, yeah.
They wanted
Malone and Stockton. And
Malone, Stockton, they were all there. They wanted nothing to do with us. We weren't even allowed to walk. Like, their dressing room was somewhat close to ours. If we came back with our gear, we couldn't walk by their dressing room. We had to walk all the way around the rink to get to our dressing room because they didn't want to interact with us.
Yeah,
get like, these we were that out big of. And again, like, I got sent there and I was living in a hotel, and they were like, "Well, you might as well just get an apartment. You don't know where to go." I think I was 21 years old, 22 maybe.
Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City. So I just grabbed an apartment like somewhat close to the rink, like just a suburb. When I told somebody who was from Salt Lake City where I lived, they were horrified. Apparently I lived in literally like in gang territory where there was like, you know, wars
just
going
like high
on and stuff.
Crime.
And I would hear like noises at night, but I didn't know what it was. I'm not lying. I furnished my place for $200. I went to the Goodwill, bought a brand new mattress, and then I bought a couch for $25. It had a giant blood stain in the middle. I put
no
it just
way.
A, I just put a blanket over top of it. I
That's
had a milk crate and a TV, and I just lived in this little studio. And apparently that area that I lived in on like Redwood Road or something like that was like the middle of hell. And I had no idea. I'd just bomb in there, you know, after a game and like just
That's
went
how,
about
how
my
ignorant
business.
I am is that like I don't even think of Salt Lake City as it's almost like a fantasy city. Like it's just not even like I think of the mountains and like I think there's a big Mormon community down there. Clearly that's their history.
Mormon population,
And I just don't, I don't know. It's like, of course, it's a big American city. Of course, there's crime. Of course, there's bad neighborhoods. And somehow you found it. There's probably one in the whole state.
My understanding is that apparently a lot of the gang activity had come from California into Salt Lake. They find like smaller cities to settle
right.
in, and that's what it was. I was literally living in, you know, a suburb of Salt Lake City, and it is, you're right, it's a beautiful city. It's a very unique city on a lot of different levels, because, you know, to go to a bar, you need a membership to that bar.
Right. Because it was a dry state, technically.
Right, it's a dry
it?
State. So to get in, you just, well, the membership's $5. So I'm like, okay, well, it's just a cover charge then.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
You know, it's not like you're a member of it forever.
No.
And the only thing that frustrated me, that it closed at 1 a.m. Like, it was such an early, and there was no, like, hey, you play for the Golden Eagles, you can stay a little bit longer. It's like,
right,
get the
no
hell
access.
Out of here.
You're out of like, here at midnight if you play on that team.
Exactly.
You got to leave early. Yeah, that is the strange thing about, like, growing up when you're in your late teens and into your 20s, if you get the opportunity to travel, and you did a ton, more than the average person, clearly, is you just, every town, every region just has a different approach to nightlife.
Right.
And if that's what you're used to, that's just what you're used to.
Yeah.
You know, like, I grew up in Toronto, and whatever Toronto was like, and it was always a 2 a.m. last call, which is pretty long. You know, decent enough amount of time. It's not crazy.
No, but then you go down to Spadina and bang on a door if you wanted.
Right.
You know, like, there's always like a, you
but
know,
you
the
go
things.
To Montreal and it was 4 a.m.
Yeah,
and that extra 2 hours like meant something, right? When you're 20,
sure.
You're like, I got an extra 2 hours at the bar.
Yeah.
Like, not that you're doing anything productive, but it felt like a very different lifestyle.
Yep, and, you're right.
You know, you go over to Europe, you go to London, everything's shut down in London by like 11. Like, people go to the pub at 5, and they go to bed at 10.
You're right.
There's no nightlife. Like, there is a nightlife, but it's just not the same. Like,
it's just different. It's different. You're right. Like, you know, when I lived in London during the lockout, like, you went to the local pub, and you're right. Like, it wasn't, hey, we're going out at 10 o'clock tonight. It's like,
no.
I'll see you there at 3:30.
Right. And we're shutting and it closes at 10. And it's just natural. Like, you're in London. We were there a couple years ago for a wedding. And my buddy Adam and I, we went over, like, with my wife and his wife as friends. It was our wife's best friend getting married over there. And we were right in central London. And we went out. We met a friend of mine out for dinner. He lives over there. We had some drinks. He's, like, working the next day. He's like, I'm out of here, but, you know, good luck. See you later. Good seeing you. And we go back to the hotel. It's, like, 10:30, 11 o'clock. And the two of us are like, why don't we go have some more drinks? You know,
right.
Like, we were kind of jet-lagged, and the girls were like, we're done, we're going to sleep. And we're like, why don't we just go out? Like, we're in London. And we went to, like, 4 or 5 different places within, like, central downtown London. Nothing was open at 11 o'clock. Nothing. And I'm like, we're in London, England. There's 11 million people that live here. It's a Thursday night, and we can't find a place that's open at 11 p.m.
Isn't that crazy? It's crazy.
It was so weird.
But that's, you know, the culture.
That's
you're just not used to it, right?
Yep,
you're just
exactly.
not used to it.
Ugh. Exactly. Gord Miller will join us. He called the game last night. He was in Vancouver calling that Leaf game, and we'll get into that with Gord and his relationship and with Walter Gretzky, who passed away last night. Wayne Gretzky, the Gretzky family, Chris Schultz, our good buddy, our longtime colleague here at TSN, he passed away as well. It's been a really tough 24 hours, so we'll get back into those stories. With Gord, we'll get to our best bets. Brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca. All right, we'll get to our best bets. Brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. Overdrive back up on TSN 2 now. If you're wondering, the O-Dog was supposed to join us. Not a personal day. Wi-Fi issues. But he did make the distinction earlier this week when you were off.
Yes.
You know, saying that as of that time, anyone that's not on the show for any purpose whatsoever, it's considered a personal day.
Okay.
So I guess, you know, we got to call him on that.
It's
I guess today
day.
Counts as a personal day for the O-Dog. And I think he would have loved this Robert Gomez story at the Ernie Palmer.
He would have accused you of doing that. That's
absolutely.
What I kept thinking.
Absolutely. Anyone that does anything fraudulent in golf, somehow it's I did it first. Like, I was the one that established that move. And Robert Gomez is a guy who, I don't know how many modern golf fans are familiar with him. He won the tournament at Bay Hill back in 90, stealing it effectively from your boy Greg Norman. Like, Norman got greased so many times in golf. Like, a lot of it was self-inflicted choke jobs,
right.
But some of it was just, like, Gomez, he holds a 2-on-18 to win the tournament and steal it from Greg Norman. But as a result, because he won the tournament, he can play in it every year. And he's in his 50s, hits the ball probably like 215 off the tee. He shot 92 at Bay Hill today, but it's officially a disqualification because he signed a card with the wrong number. And there are a lot of allegations out there that Robert Gomez did so intentionally, put himself down for a 79, so officially it wouldn't count as a record.
I think it's brilliant. Like I kind of appreciate it, too.
There's a part of me that really likes it.
Yeah, why not? I mean, like, you're done anyway, yourself, too.
Like, yeah, you're going home anyway. What do you care? Like, you got no integrity at that point. You shot 92. You're trying to save face as much as you can.
Just get disqualified. But if you're shooting that poorly, what would be the difference in you picking your ball up on 15?
It's exactly. If you're going to get disqualified, why not chuck a club into the water and just walk off and pretend like you're really upset, like you were supposed to play so much better?
Right.
You know, at least then that would give off that impression. Like, I just don't even know what's going on today. I'm going to break a club and I'm out of here. Don't finish 18. If you're going to take an intentional disqualification, don't even let them say you played 18.
Right. Like, they don't even give them the satisfaction of counting the 92 strokes.
Right.
Just be like, okay, I'm at 15. I'm on the 15th hole. And
incomplete.
I'm at 79 already.
I hit four hole in ones from here on out. How do you know that? Maybe I actually do that and I don't card a 92.
Let me ask you this. Is there any belief in your mind in the next couple of years you will ever hear that name again on the, like, you know, winning a tournament? Like,
never, ever. Robert Gomez. I saw like the shot tracker, which can really pump the tires of a player. Like, you look at a guy like DeChambeau where they show him hitting over a lake and carrying the ball 330 yards and get, you know, hitting a green in two when it's a 600 yard hole or whatever. And you just see, you know, two massive kind of streams on the screen where you're like, that's really impressive that he got there in two. There's a par four at Bay Hill. That's about 450 yards. Tough hole. It took him four to get to the green, Robert Gomez. So they showed like the shot tracker. He hits one like 210 off the green, off the tee. And he's like 180, so he's still short. He's a buck 20 out, finally gets on the green. It's like, that is not supposed to happen on the PGA Tour.
Not on the tour.
No, that's what I would be doing. Like, I would shoot 92 at Bay Hill, and I'd be happy. I wouldn't pretend like I shot a 79.
Right.
But speaking of DeChambeau, because always in here, he's in the clubhouse. He made the cut, so that was a big bet for yours truly. I don't know if you heard about that. Yeah, you were on Wednesday.
Yeah.
You were here on Wednesday? I can't remember.
Yeah, I was here. Yeah.
Yeah, we bet that he would miss the cut, and clearly he made the cut, so owes me some scratch. I feel good about that.
Well, mark that on the,
on the
list of how much.
Documented for sure. Best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. Last night, the Leafs, you know, wasn't their best game. I didn't think they played poorly, but, you know, credit to Vancouver. Obviously, the big story of the night, though, was Walter Gretzky passing away, and I thought TSN did an exceptional job. I'm not just saying that because I'm biased. I am biased. You know, these are all my friends, our colleagues. We work here. I thought James and the crew did a great job. And we heard from Gord in the second intermission, Gord Miller.
Right.
And he spoke so eloquently about his relationship with Walter and the Gretzky family. And we're lucky to have our buddy Gord Miller on now. Thank you for doing this, Gord. Obviously, tough news. You may have been more aware of the status of Walter Gretzky than the average person. I'm sure you were. And that he was moving maybe in this direction. But when you heard the news last night, your reaction, considering how well you knew Walter Gretzky?
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, Walter had taken a turn for the worse a couple of weeks ago, and Wayne and his brother Keith were both in the States when they got the word, so they had to apply for an emergency waiver to fly up, and they were able to see Walter before, you know, he lost consciousness. And the one thing I think about when this happens is when someone says, you know, oh, how old was he? Oh, he lived a good life, and, you know, he's not in pain anymore. That's true. You know, five kids lost their dad and seven grandkids lost their grandfather. And I don't know how much consolation it is that, you know, he's not in pain anymore. I mean, it's a sad day for the family. And, you know, I think that Walter was a force of nature in so many ways. But first and foremost, he was their dad for Wayne and Kim and Keith. and Glenn and Brent, that was their dad.
No, you're absolutely right. And he took on the title of Canada's hockey dad, which I think was absolutely warranted. And I think, obviously, Wayne put him in the spotlight because of how great of a player he was and a phenom as a kid and what he did come the NHL. But you don't hold on to that title or hold on to that popularity throughout the country, and certainly in this region in Southern Ontario, unless you're a genuinely, you know, good person, charming person, charitable person. And everyone's got a story about Walter Gretzky.
Sure. And I think, you know, Walter didn't get the Order of Canada because he was Wayne Gretzky's dad. He got it because he's raised more money and more awareness for charity than most corporations.
Right.
You know, that's why he got the Order of Canada. He was really a celebrity in his own right. And you always laugh, you know, you'd be out with Walter and Wayne, and as many people wanted Walter's autograph as Wayne's. But let's not forget, too, he almost died 30 years ago. You know, he had a brain aneurysm, and Wayne had just bought into the Argos, and I remember the Argos were practicing when the word came out that Walter had the aneurysm, and it wasn't clear he'd survive the night. You know, the Argos stopped their practice and knelt down and had a prayer for him. And I think a number of things happened after that aneurysm. Obviously, it was a near-death experience, which would change anyone, but also it changed his brain chemistry. Walter lost a lot of his memories. You know, you would talk to Walter about something, and he would look at you kind of sheepishly and say, "Was I there?" You know, stuff that happened in the 80s. And so that changed. His personality changed somewhat. Some would say, I think Wayne has said, you know, in many ways for the better. You know, not he's a bad guy before, but, you know, that experience gave him an empathy and a compassion for people that was hard to match.
Yeah, Gord, you're talking about some of the things that he went through. Like, we had Duthie on earlier, and Hayes has shared stories. I shared a story about, just crossing paths with Walter, because that's the one thing that I think is so consistent, especially with everyone from this area. Everyone's got a Walter Gretzky story, whether it's, you know, hey, I saw him at Loblaws. You know, it might be as simple as that. Like, redeeming qualities, if you think of it, is there anything that we wouldn't know about Walter that obviously you're very close to them that, you know, maybe that you could share with us? Or, you know, was he a chess player or something like that? You know, something just, out of the box, you know what I mean?
There's two things. One is that the pre-aneurysm Walter was different in a lot of ways. He was a chain-smoking Bell telephone wire stringer, really. He actually suffered a serious injury while working for Bell. I think he fell off a pole and fractured his skull at one point in his career. But he worked for Bell for 34 years, and he was not a person to be trifled with. He was very proud of his kids, all of his kids, and he also kept score. There was a guy, Dick Beddoes. I don't know, Brian, if you remember.
Yep,
Dick Beddoes.
Of course.
He was a colorful character in Southern Ontario, a columnist and a broadcaster who, for some reason, didn't like Wayne. In the early 80s, you know, said he was overrated, overpaid, would have been a fourth-line player on a good original six team, just kept going after him. And I remember the All-Star game was in Calgary in 85, I think it was, and Walter was there, and there was a reception, and he saw Beddoes across the room, and he was going to go after him. Now, I don't know if he would have hit him or not, but it took several people to hold Wally back and Phyllis, his wife, to convince him not to go over and confront Beddoes. Post aneurysm, Wally would not have done that. But the thing I think about most of all with him is that you could take the most famous celebrity, the best known sports star, a captain of industry, the most powerful politician, and Walter could make that person feel at ease. He'd tease them and make them feel like one of the gang. At the same time, he could take someone who was an usher at the gardens or worked at a concession stand or drove a bus and make them feel special and make them feel like they had a story that he wanted to hear. And that's a gift. And you can't fake that. It has to come from an authenticity and a genuine nature. And that's what Walter was. He's one of the most genuine, authentic people I've ever come across. And I remember one time at the Gardens, I think it was, a young fellow came up and asked for his autograph, and And Walter said, where are you from? And the kid said, I'm from Belleville. And Walter said, oh, do they still have that dairy there that makes the great ice cream? And the kid's eyes went, yeah, we go there all the time. And Walter says, oh, I love chocolate ice cream. What's your favorite flavor? Like, just for that kid, you know, this wasn't about Wayne or about, you know, hockey or anything else. Walter was interested in that young man's story. And I've actually lifted that from Walter a little bit. When I meet people, especially when I travel to military bases, the first thing I will ask someone is, where are you from? Because it's a way of showing that you're interested in the other person. And that's a complete lift from Walter. And a lot of us have looked at that from Walter.
We're chatting with Gord Miller. Gord was in Vancouver last night calling the Leafs-Canucks game. And during the game, around the second period or just towards the end of it, news broke that Walter Gretzky had passed away at the age of 82. And you guys are both Alberta boys, you know, grew up obviously well aware of the significance of Wayne Gretzky. And we were talking about this earlier as well, Gord. You know, because of how great of a player he was, because of his childhood phenom. I mean, the numbers he was putting up at a young age, the fact that he came to Toronto and really changed the game in terms of Ontario kids trying to get into the GTHL or the MTHL, I believe, at that point, really kind of was a Maverick-type move and changed the way we see minor hockey in a lot of ways. And he got there because of how great of a player he was, how great of a Canadian he was. He loved being Canadian. He loved wearing the flag and all that. But I do think the fact that he spent, you know, a good portion of his career in a Canadian market goes a long way in terms of how popular Wayne Gretzky is. And I just don't know what he would be today if he spent his whole career in St. Louis or in L.A. And I think the fact that he was in Edmonton, and you guys can speak to it, what he meant there, and as a result, when Walter was in town, the buzz that would come with it, I think it really allowed for Wayne to get to the status he's currently at, which is unmatched in Canadian sports history.
Well, I think he won a lot. Sidney Crosby, I think, is pretty highly regarded by Canadians. He spent his whole career in Pittsburgh.
But it's just different. I think it's different, Gord. Like, I think it's such a big country, but if you play for one of our seven teams, it's like you're ours. Like McDavid, he's in Canada. Like, it just, for me, it just feels a little bit different. It just pushes the story a little bit further that he's breaking records for one of our teams and winning for one of our teams.
I guess that's part of it. I mean, to me, I mean, Wayne transcended hockey. I mean, he's, when you talk about the greatest athletes in all of sports, he's in that conversation.
Yep.
And so I don't know that, I mean, obviously being at Edmonton in the 80s as I was, I mean, you know, I saw it close up what it was like there. And obviously being on national television in Canada, but I think it would have been big no matter what. I think the bigger thing is the values. When you think about Wayne Gretzky, this comes from his parents. This comes from Walter and Phyllis. The first magazine article was written about him, I think, when he was 9 years old. When have you heard Wayne say or do something that was offensive, you know, crossed a line? Like, you know, really, you haven't. You know, there's no drunken driving arrests. There's no bar fights. There's nothing. And that comes from his parents. He was, and all the kids. Like, when you talk to the five of them and you look at the grandkids, like, I remember Walter around the grandkids one night in L.A., Ty and Trevor, Wayne's two older boys, were stealing candy bars from the family lounge. And Walter made them go back in, put the candy bars away, and apologize to the guy that was working in there for taking
them. Wow. Yeah.
It's amazing. It just stems back from, like you said, it's an upbringing, because I brought this up too to Duthie and to Hayes. The fact that I'm sure Wayne probably offered to buy him a house or move him to L.A. or move, you know, here's a mansion in Oakville for you. And it just seemed like he was very content and very humble to live at his house. I believe it's in Brantford.
In Brantford, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, it was like an open house. You know, if you walk by and put it, you want to come in, he'd show you the basement. And you know, the funny thing was he drove blue Chevy station wagons forever. and Wayne bought him a blue Cadillac. And Walter said, don't they have station wagons? Really. But one of the other things was, you know, the origin of the backyard rink is interesting, because I'm sure people flooded backyard rinks before Walter did. His was just the most famous, and of course it sort of touched off a national obsession with it. The reason that Walter flooded the backyard rink was they didn't have a lot of money. And he didn't want to go to the park and watch Wayne skate and burn gas in the car staying warm. It was a lot cheaper to flood the backyard rink and watch from the window. And the funny thing was, Walter was quite meticulous about it. He used a lawn sprinkler. The problem with that is, in the cold, it gets jammed up, it'll freeze and crack. Walter was the only person in Canada who was going to the hardware store in January and buying lawn sprinklers.
Right. Yeah, it's just an incredible story, an incredible life. And, Walter Gretzky passing away at the age of 82, and a true Canadian icon, legend, celebrity, whichever way you want to phrase it. And I thought you guys handled it really well last night. And, listen, the Leafs, they'll get back at it tomorrow, right, Gord? Guaranteed win night. Are you going to call it right here on the show or what?
You know I don't make predictions. I bet, but I don't make predictions.
Okay.
I think the one thing is, look, 3 and 4 nights, back-to-back, that's it doesn't matter who's playing who. I mean, there's a decided advantage to the team that's rested. They didn't play, as you said, they didn't play badly last night. They just, I think a couple of the goals, the one was, Hall kind of poked it in by accident. The second Bertanen goal, Hutchinson, goes over his shoulder, not a great goal. That's that reverse VH that Jamie's always pushing.
I'm not pushing it out there. It's the save selection. Unfortunately, when you get scored on there, it looks awful. And that looked like an awful goal.
Yep.
Like, do you disagree?
No, it was brutal.
Like that was,
Bertanen, can't happen.
Matt Martin, I think, scored a goal off a goalie's head.
Yeah.
The day before. Was that the day before? I get everything mixes together.
Yeah, Martin, he had a two-pack of goals a couple nights
ago. I will ask this. I'm not a goalie coach. I'm not qualified, but I will ask this. Why is a person who's 6'3" making himself 3'6"?
I don't know.
I do think that they'll obviously come back stronger tomorrow night. And, those are going to happen. I just Patrice Bergeron said a couple of weeks ago the Bruins lost, maybe a month ago, the Bruins lost to the Islanders. I think it was their seventh game in 11 days or something. And he just said, we're out of gas. Now, you never want to make an excuse, and they're professional athletes, but, the schedule can be your toughest opponent.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And it has been tough. It's been tough for every team. It's going to be tough for every team. But the beauty of it is you're going right back at it like two nights later, and that'll be the case tomorrow night. Great stuff as always. Great stuff last night, and we really appreciate the insight and the time, Gord. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this, buddy.
Take care, guys.
There's Gord Miller of TSN. And, Walter Gretzky passing away at the age of 82. Our good friend Chris Schultz as well of TSN, played in the NFL, played in the CFL, was a long time, like the man for football here at TSN for a long, long time.
Absolutely.
Really good guy. We came in contact with a ton when we were in the studio.
He was such a big man, too.
Huge.
Yeah,
like, could you imagine trying to get around him? Like, how big, strong, and fast do you have to be if Chris Schultz is blocking you and you're trying to get to the quarterback?
I know. I know. And he had a great sense of humor. I mean, he was everything about it. I know Ray said it earlier, but, two great people were lost within a 24-hour span that, obviously – so dear to people. Schultz, he was so good to us on the show, and that's where I miss being in person, those stop and chats. I would always stop and chat with Schultz.
He loved
our show. He would come and chat with us
all the time. He'd come in the studio, he'd be out on the couch right when we walked out. You'd have a stop and chat. What's up, Schultz? Who do you like this weekend? No, it's not the same, and it won't be the same without
Agreed.
Both of them moving forward. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Wrap up the show. Look ahead of the weekend. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the NHL board, I'm on the under in the St. Louis-LA game tonight. I like Minnesota. They've been rolling, and they're in Arizona. And I like Vegas in San Jose. Throw down 20. You can score 71. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine is the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, put your knowledge on the line. NBA All-Star Weekend, we'll see how that plays out. No Raptor content really over the weekend. And the Leafs are back in action tomorrow night in Vancouver before they return home. And I think they play Winnipeg on Tuesday.
Yeah, they do. I think they've got Winnipeg a couple times in a row. It's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Is it?
They got a bunch of games. Yeah, I want to say they got Winnipeg in town for three, I think.
Yeah, I think it's three in a row. Yeah.
So those would be – that's a litmus test, right? Like, you're looking for it. You're trying to find – you can't play Boston or Washington or Vegas. So who's the other – the hottest team before was Edmonton, and you took care of them with three straight games. Now it's Winnipeg, who's pretty hot. And, you know, they got past Montreal again last night in overtime.
So they keep grinding away.
They'll keep grinding, exactly. And shout-out to Corey Connors, Canadian content, sitting atop the Arnie Palmer. We'll see what he can do down at Bay Hill this weekend. And we believe the O-Dog will be back. Personal day for the O-Dog today. We'll jot him down for one.
Exactly.
We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy your weekends. We are back Monday at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.